No. Last year, the Commission announced they're going to work on a new package of patent regulations. We don't yet have the text. So there was a call for input, and people have responded to this. So we did have some chance to give input to the Commission already, but that was at the stage where we didn't see what is actually being proposed. We still have not seen it. It will be published in April of this year. But at this stage, we are already planning, because we know this is going to be a big topic. So what you're going to see right now is the early stage planning of what a campaign that could help free software deal with software patents could look like in the coming months. And to start, it's going to be my colleague here, Panos, from N Software Patents.
Yeah, so hi, everyone. I am Panos Alvropoulos. I have been working on the N Software Patents campaign for a while, for about 2 years approximately. Just to give an overview of the presentation today, I'm going to talk about, in general, what's the deal with SCPs and FRANT, and a rough overview of case law, and then Kiaran will present the free software's toughest problem and 5 fixes we can think about it. So what's the deal with SCPs and FRANT? Two words that are probably unknown to many. SCP stands for Standard Essential Patent, and FRAND stands for Fair, Reasonable, and Non-Discriminatory. Just to illustrate what's going on here. As we all know, in technology, standards are very important. So if we want devices to work with each other and we want them to be compatible, we need to use a standard, right? So these standards are usually, the rules for these standards are going to be set up by standard setting organizations. So what happens is that for a known standard, there are usually patents that are very important for the standard to work. So those standards are called standard essential patents. And if one wants to participate in the standard, they need to use the patent. So that person is called implementer, and they have to get a license from the SCP holder. Now, of course, as we all know, a patent is very restrictive to everyone. So here's what standard setting organizations do. They require from the SCP holders to license their patents, their SCPs, with under FRAND licenses. Now, it sounds great, but there are issues. As we said, FRAND stands for Fair, Reasonable, and Non-Discriminatory, but that's a very, very, very vague term. First of all, it can affect everyone that's working with standards, and that includes network protocols, Internet of Things, audio-video codecs, the automotive industry, so on and on. And the problem is that when the implementers have to use the patents, they have to come under agreements with the SCP holders. And the SCP holders they try to charge as much money as possible, and most likely, the implementers are not very satisfied with that. So the real problem is that there's a potential abuse of dominant power, of dominant position by the SCP holders, and the high transaction costs for implementers are simply unsustainable for SMEs, for small and medium enterprises. And that, in general adds up to the legal uncertainty regarding software patents. So to be more specific on the way this has been reflected in the courts, because what happens is that when you have an implementer and they come into a disagreement with a patent holder, what happens is that litigation happens. So they go to the courts, right? And what do the courts say? Well, they can try to help as much as possible. I have a layout here of the court decisions that have been relevant and have been basically the landmark decisions in Europe. First of all, it all started with the German Federal Supreme Court And it started with a very strict and conservative stance, very pro-SAP holder stance, because it basically had a very strict test for a front defense. And the front defense is basically when the implementer says, yes, you are the SAP holder, but the money that you charge for that are way too high for me to actually participate in the market. And that's an abuse of your dominant position. And the German Federal Supreme Court was more in favor of the patent holders, and that was in 2009. But then what happened is that we had a very important decision from the European Court of Justice that concerned competition law, and it took a more balanced approach. And then in 2020, there was another decision. Actually, there was no decision. There was a German lower court which asked for more clarifications from the European Court of Justice. And unfortunately for everyone, the decision was there was no decision. It was settled out of court, so the court had no chance to answer those questions. To be more specific on what the German Federal Supreme Court said back in 2009, it had a very strict test, and it said the alleged infringer can rely on a competition law defense only if it does the following two steps. Only if it unconditionally offers to enter into a license agreement with the SAP holder, and, more importantly, if it behaves as if it were an actual licensee, so that would mean that it would have to act as if there's already a license and pay royalties. And it was up to the defendant to prove that the two conditions above are fulfilled. What happened, though, is that in 2014 there were two important commission decisions about antitrust issues with Motorola and Samsung. And the European Commission stated that a patent holder abuses its dominant position when, having given a front commitment over an SAP to a standard-setting organization, it seeks injunction against a willing licensee. And a willing licensee remains free to challenge the validity of the patent or its infringement. Now, that was very important because the German courts didn't recognize that. They didn't expect the defendant. They expected the defendants to give up some fundamental rights like this. So, in about 2015, the European Court of Justice responded to a lower German court. Because the German courts recognized that, okay, there's a difference between what the German Federal Supreme Court says and what the European Commission is doing. So the European Court of Justice came in and clarified what's going on. And it said there's a very broad test here, but it's helpful enough for national courts to expand it further. The SAP holder must alert the implementer in writing of the infringement complained of by noting the relevant SAP and how it's alleged to be infringed. The implementer must express a willingness to conclude a licensing agreement on front terms. The SAP holder must provide a specific written offer for a license on front terms. The implementer must diligently respond to that offer in accordance with recognized commercial practices and in good faith. And if the implementer does not accept the offer made to it, a counteroffer that corresponds to front terms should be made. So based on that language, you can probably figure out that the courts didn't really solve any problems. What they basically helped is to help the companies negotiate better on what front really is. And you might have guessed from the name of the campaign, Answer Through Patents, what we're trying to do. But it's important to follow decisions like this because it's important to understand how patents work, and yeah, how FRAND can actually affect standards. And finally, just for your information, there are more cases that should be studied, but we don't have the time to present them here. It's the United Kingdom Supreme Court Unwired Planet versus Huawei in 2020 that concerns the UK. And there are two more decisions from the German Federal Supreme Court in 2020 that are also of great importance. So with that, I conclude my part of the presentation and I give the floor to Kiara. Yeah, you just click the...
Okay, so the first time I came to Brussels was in 2002, and it was to come to FOSDEM. And at that time, Richard Stallman gave the keynote address in the Janssen Theatre, and it inspired me to work on free software policy topics as a priority. So a few months later then, I got interested in software patents in particular. And a lot of people looked at the topic and saw it was a bit daunting, and after years people said to me, you've been working on this for 10 years and there's no progress, how do you keep your motivation? And then they said after 15 years, how do you keep your motivation? And finally I stuck with it, and now I can make the joke that after 20 years all of the software patents that I was worried about have now become invalid. But of course there are now a new generation of software patents. When I said I was giving this talk, I was asked, oh, can you talk about the Unified Patent Court? No, I can't. Very important, but there's no time, sorry. Can you talk about software patents coming into India via the AI law? No, I'm sorry, I can't. Can you talk about the idea of AI writing software patents? Because I think the patent applications are such nonsense, I think AI is the perfect thing to write the next generation of them. But no, I can't. Can you talk about the Cyber Resilience Act? We all should be. This is going to be massive, but no, it's got nothing to do with patents. So audio-video patents are the worst case scenario for software, because you have to form a standard first off. You then have to convince all of the manufacturers of hardware that this is worth putting into their hardware, because you cannot do audio-video with just software. Audio-video software used to be optimized for decoding, because encoding would happen on some mainframe somewhere and you'd download the video and you'd watch it. But now with video chat, you have to do real-time encoding, transmission, so you need a small file size, and then decoding, and it should be almost real-time. You convince these hardware manufacturers to put it onto their hardware, and then you have to wait 5 years, because then you have to wait for everyone, a whole world of computer users, to throw out their current hardware and buy a new generation of hardware. So after 5 years, finally, the standard will be hardware accelerated on everyone's computer, and then you can really use it. If at that point somebody comes along with a patent and says, actually, you know, I own a bit of that software, there is very little you can do. You can no longer innovate around the problem. So software patents on standards are the worst type of patents for software, and on video standards, they are the worst of the worst. This is happening already. We have an audio format, Opus, which is not very famous. However, it is the successor to the OGG audio format. It is used in a lot of hardware devices. There is currently a patent pool being formed to threaten the Opus audio format. We have the AV1 video format, which is being developed to be freely implementable. And already there has been a request sent to the European Commission to investigate the people working on this for anti-competitive practices, because trying to help each other avoid patent problems might be a bad thing for some companies. Before I get into it, I saw that yesterday there was published a paper by Andrew Katz and four other researchers. I didn't get their names, but it is on implementing the HEVC standard in software, so I expect that's very interesting, but I will not be talking about it. There are a lot of topics here. So there was a commission call for input last year. There were responses from Open Forum Europe, who I currently work for, and from Open Source Initiative, Simon. However, these comments were sent based on not actually knowing what text is going to be presented. So they were, you know, kind of general comments on what patent policy could be like. We still haven't seen the text that is going to be presented by the European Commission, but as I said, this is early stage planning for a campaign. We have to start thinking already about what possibilities we have to fix this, what different form can it take? Because when we're talking to policy makers, the way it works is you have to give them a list of different fixes that you're looking for, and then they will say which ones are politically possible, and then you have to start trying to maximize each of the ones that are politically possible. So I've found five starting ideas, but this is a discussion document, basically. We can try and discuss them further as in the coming weeks. The first idea would be a carve-out specific to free software. A few years ago, this might have sounded a bit overly optimistic, but now in the Cyber Resilience Act and the Product Liability Directive, there is this text. And when we first saw it, we were amazed to see free and open source software should not be covered. Excellent. Of course, once you start reading it, then you realize, well, there's an objective limitation here. You can use this exemption if you're trying to do innovation or research. There is a commercial activity limitation, and we all know that commercial activity has never been defined and is an endless source of unclarity for what exactly that means for software and online activities. And it should be exempted. So a judge will have to interpret whether or not you're allowed to use this exemption, which basically means that nobody can confidently make use of this exemption. So it's not very useful. However, the fact that this is in a document from the Commission in two proposals for regulations tells us that inside the Commission, something along these lines is acceptable. They didn't get the wording quite right this time, but they are not completely opposed to this kind of thing. So this is a starting point. Maybe we can do something along these lines. The second possibility would be a similar end result, but from a different starting point, and would be to try and carve industry into two sections. For example, we might find that small and medium business is in the manufacturing and pharmaceutical areas might be perfectly happy with having more patents and might want help from the Commission to apply for patents and use their patents. We happen to not like that, so maybe we should have a different regime for them and one for us. There is already, as part of this patent package, there is a regulation that is specific to pharmaceutical patents, so the Commission is not opposed to singling out sector by sector. Our argument can be that our sector is different because we have collaborative models and we have market solutions. If you look at the patent clauses of the GPL and the Apache 2.0 license, we already have market solutions, so maybe we can tell the European Commission, don't interfere with what we're already fixing. A third fix, and this is still quite early stage, is the idea of competition law. I've always believed that there is not enough discussion of how competition law is weakened by the existence of patents. The European Commission loves to work on patent law, and it's a big topic in the European Commission, but it just seems that there is not enough dialogue between people who are enforcing competition law and people who are working on patent policy. So I think maybe if we could find a way to make it clearer to the European Commission and the European institutions in general that, you know, how these two topics interact, maybe we could help make them understand what we're trying to achieve. The fourth one, there are only five, I'm not going to go on all night. The fourth one is something that will definitely be discussed because the Commission has mentioned this in their documents. So, Frand, at times we think the idea of non-discriminatory, that must help us because, you know, we don't want regimes that discriminate against free software. We need patent regimes that allow for royalty-free use of patents. However, non-discriminatory, currently the standard meaning for this is that you don't discriminate between individuals. If you have a certain system for working out how much royalties you're going to ask for, you have to apply the same system to each potential licensee. However, maybe we can expand this. Maybe we can work with this term and find a way to talk about non-discriminatory so that it is not just prevents the patent regime from discriminating against free software, which cannot pay royalty fees because we can't count the copies. If that doesn't work, then of course the word fair, it's an even more vague word, but maybe we can do something with this word to talk about how fair should apply to free software. There's also, as part of this patent package, there is a regulation coming on compulsory licensing. So maybe that angle can also be used there to ask for something that works with free software, so that would have to be a royalty-free, sub-licensable patent license with no domain limit. And the last fix, being presented for the first time. So the whole problem with software patents in Europe has always been that we have a patent law that says software is not patentable as such. And the policymakers, when we complained we don't want software patents, they said, but it's not patentable. Look, software is not patentable as such. The problem was that, of course, the patent applications were always written as patent, you know, on a limited resource device which, you know, interacts with this. And there's always a way to make software sound like it's more than just software as such. What if we asked them to give an example? What if we asked them to put this into a patent law on software, standard essential patents? Software which reads, transmits, or puts data into a data format standard is an example of software as such. If we could do this, and this is a crazy idea, maybe we could find a way to get software as such to be defined in a concrete way, and we could actually start using the idea that software as such is not patentable. Now, when we used to campaign against software patents, the commission, you know, because this software is not patentable as such, language was there, they said, oh, don't worry, there's not going to be American-style software patents. It's not going to happen. I would like to try and find out the documents they used to use, and, you know, I want to find any statements, anything that they ever said that explained what their motivation was. You know, if they were saying that their intention was that data formats, for example, or compatibility, interoperability, which is a massive buzzword now in the European institutions, if these things were not meant to be hampered by software patents, then maybe we can say, well, you know, please clarify this. Your regulation says you want to reduce the unclarity. Give us some clarity on what exactly software as such is, and maybe we can put this into law. Those are my five fixes. I don't have a favourite one. We don't know which one is going to be acceptable. We don't know what text even we have to insert any of these into. But this is something that we will be, well, continuing to hold a dialogue on in the coming weeks and months. And I hope this topic gets lots of attention and lots of you get involved. With that, we do have a tool for coordinating work on this, and panelists will briefly.
I have a microphone.
Of course.
You probably guessed it from the whole presentation. There's so much information to be digested, and it's extremely difficult to talk about all of this in 25 minutes. But what we are trying to do with our websites at End Software Patents is to have the central resource for everything for software patents. So that includes case law, legislation, and that includes the whole world. We want to make people not forget software patents like they forgot them, like probably the last 15 years. And we try to make everything about software patents, let's make them the headlines. Let's make software patents something that everyone should be concerned, and not make the copyright the only issue that concerns free software, because patents actually concern not only free software, but software in general. And with that, we would like to thank you for your attention. Please try to contribute to these resources. It's extremely valuable. Yes.
Okay, we have time for one question, and this is going to Simon, sorry.
Thank you very much. So I'll try and frame this in the form of a question if I can. One thing I'd like to point out about all of your comments about FRAND is that all of those lawsuits that you displayed included Etsy as a co-respondent, because the FRAND expectation is not a part of law, it's a part of the way the specification of the standard is written. Mm-hmm. And as a consequence, anything based on FRAND commitments is on very shifty ground, because there's no real proof that anybody is actually forced to do things on FRAND terms anyway. So I don't like number four. Number two, your carve-out, I've written a paper on that for OFE, and I think that's the one to go for, because there is actually a division between standards that are done that are implementation-based and ones that are requirements-based, where monetization depends on patents. And so you can find a compromise that will work there. And I'd like to invite you to come with me to an Etsy meeting and meet the people who think we are all crazy, batshit crazy idiots who want to destroy the European economy. Because that's what they say to me when I say anything you just said. And we're not going to get anywhere with the Commission unless we understand their position and appear to accommodate it, even if we think they're the ones that are crazy. Then that implementation paper from Andrew Katz you saw, the important thing to know about it is it says it's impossible for an open source implementation to get any licenses to any patents in any standards because they went and tried for the standard that's mentioned in the title. So that paper isn't a general paper about the topic. They went and tried to go and get FRAND licenses and they found it was impossible for them to go and secure FRAND licenses to any of those standards. So this whole thing is based on a false premise that anyone is going to actually fairly get licenses. This is all about entrapping implementers into the universe of the companies that have rigged the standards at the regulatory captured standards organizations.
Okay, cool. So let's move to Côte d'Azur.
The term FRAND is in the Commission's call for input. So it seems, although it is not in European law at the moment, there is a regulation from 2012 that has some reference to it, but as it's not in general European law, but it's in the Commission's call for input, so it may be defined, and if it is going to be defined, then let's define it ourselves. Thank you.
Nice conclusion. Thanks a lot. Thank you.